Joining us now is Mrs. Penina Pflug, LCSW. Mrs. Pflug is a couples therapist in private practice. She focuses on emotionally focused couples therapy. She also teaches marriage enhancement courses and workshops to engaged and newlywed couples. And she also trains others to teach these workshops as well. Mrs. Pflug, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much. Well, marriage, you know a little bit about that. So that's what you do day in, day out, coaching couples. Getting married is a huge adjustment, obviously, both for the new husband and the new wife. So in your experience, do new marriages typically start off smoothly? Is this something that you can just get into and it's going to run smoothly? Or do we have oftentimes rocky starts and a difficult transition?
Okay, so that's a great question. I don't have data here, but I can tell you what helps marriage go smoothly. First of all, as we know, many marriages start off well and go smoothly. But we also see, unfortunately, so many early divorces in our community. And what I'm noticing is that everybody is so upset and kind of talking about this. Did you hear all these 20-year-olds getting divorces? Yet, unfortunately, nobody's saying, what can we do to prevent this, right? So I don't have the data to say how the percentage of which marriages go smoothly and how many start off rocky. But we know many start off smoothly and many don't, right? So what can we do to set up our children for healthy marriages that start off well and that go smoothly? And I think that this has to do with us rethinking the whole shidduch and engagement process, right? So I'm not trying to change the shidduch process. I know it works for many. However, I do think that we have to rethink some of what we're doing because there is a sense of urgency to get children married. The children feel it, the parents see it. And I think that the problem is that we're not looking at the big picture and saying, what is going to make our children successfully married, happily married in 5 years, right? We're just kind of trying to get them married, right? Sometimes it's the shadchanim are pushing, oh, well, you're up to date 10. You should know by now, right? And sometimes it's the parent, right? So what helps a marriage start off on the right foot? What helps a marriage go smoothly? So I think what helps is that as parents, and I'm a parent of children in their 20s also, and I see this every day in my practice, as parents, we need to guide our children through the dating process and through the engagement. It's not just about getting them engaged or married. We need to start when they're come home from Israel for the year, talking to them about what does healthy marriage look like? What's their role? The other thing what helps these young couples start off well is some self-awareness, communication skills, relationship role models, right? From their parents or from a mentor.
So they need to know what they're getting into and they need coaching as to how to deal with the issues that will be coming up. It shouldn't be that you go in blind, not knowing what to expect. So maybe we can look into that a little bit. When it comes to newlyweds, what are they going to have to get used to? What changes and adjustments are they going to need to make? And accordingly, how are we going to coach them on those changes? So what's different, I guess? What are the fundamental differences? We had a boy who was in the dorm, who was in a dira with a bunch of guys in yeshiva, and we have a young lady who went to seminary and was with all the girls and they had similar values and similar interests. And then you get married and these are very different beings, obviously. A man is a man, a woman is a woman. So what are the adjustments that are going to have to be made and how do we coach them accordingly once we understand those adjustments and changes that will be happening?
Okay, sure. So one issue that comes up that's hard to adjust to is you have two people who or coming from different homes, right? Completely different homes. Some families talk about their feelings. Some families don't. Some families argue out loud and some families, act like everything's okay or shove things under the rug. So you're going to have two people very often coming from different families. And they have different expectations, right? So they might expect their spouse to be like their mother or father, right? And they might not think about that when they're engaged, right? So I think what's really important is to help them have healthy expectations, right? The other thing is that many people today, regardless of, you know, what sect of Judaism or Orthodoxy they're part of, are exposed to some type of movies, right? Or some type of unrealistic examples of what a relationship looks like. And then when they're actually married, they're like, wait, you know, it's not just like, you know, a happy ending, right? Like it's not just easy. I mean, I think great marriages take a great amount of work. And I think when they are newly married, they have to think about this as that I'm building the foundation for my family, right? So we always say when we teach couples, what are you doing by working on your relationship? You're actually impacting future generations, right? Your children learn from you and what they see in your relationships, right? So the foundation for your family is starting from your healthy relationship. Your healthy relationship is what's going to guide you with parenting, with adversity, right? So I think that it's about having that expectation that this is going to take work, that, you know, sometimes and many people need help. It's healthy to ask for help. Some people don't see their parents leaning and asking for help. And that's not so great. I think one of the things that we teach our couples is that it's healthy to ask for help, right? So they need to adjust to now not being a single person, right? Like you see these boys or girls, they come home from yeshiva or seminary and they basically only have to worry about themselves. I mean, some parents, even if they help, they're really thinking about themselves. Now they're married, they have to be thinking about their spouse all the time. They can't make their own decisions. They also have to work on being a good listener. So some people think if I'm a nice person, I'm going to be a good spouse, good parent, but we can't really wing these things. Like it actually takes work to learn the skills. They have to learn to be more giving. They have to learn to put their spouse first before anyone else.
Okay. That was a lot. I mean, let me go through piece by piece. That was great, but that was a lot. Number one, word is people come from very different upbringings, and that's independent of them being a man or a woman. Different households will have an impact on the kids, and they have different chinuch. So that's number one. Okay. Number two, they should have healthy expectations, and that's going to be part of the chinuch process when they come back from yeshiva or they come back from seminary to start discussing, or before that even, healthy expectations as to what marriage is. So that was point number two. Number three is it takes work. It takes effort. It's not going to be necessarily easygoing. And the more you put in, the more you get out, and the longer lasting, hopefully it'll be. Number four, I heard was get help when necessary. So when necessary, outsource, get people who have advice and not necessarily the parents, or maybe definitely not the parents. It should be a professional. And last, I would put it as it's not like having a roommate. This isn't just having a roommate that it was one of the guys or one of the ladies, one of the girls, but it's about full-time giving. So is that a good recap of what you said?
Yes.
You also said you have to be a good listener. So maybe I get a point for being a good listener on all of that. the other side, obviously part of this and being a good listener, is knowing what the other side is going through. So what does a young man have to know about a young lady? What does a young lady have to know about a young man? Because they are different. We're not talking about necessarily about chinuch now, how they grew up, but that they're wired differently. They're just different. You know, what's that book that man is from Mars and women is from Venus or something like that?
Yeah.
So never read it, but I've heard about it. So what do they have to know? Because there are going to be striking differences between having your roommate in yeshiva and now having your wife.
Right. So some of the things I think that men need to keep in mind about their wife, so, you know, let's say a chassan has to keep in mind about his kala's adjustment is that a lot of times women might be upset about something, right? And a typical man is going to come home and she's going to say, I had a really hard day at work. I hate my job. And he's going to say, get a new job. Right? Or what did you do? You know, maybe you can make it better, right? And most women don't want that, right? They just want him to listen and say that's hard, right? So that's definitely adjustment. Now, with these type of differences, it's not always stereotypical, right? Sometimes men also need that at times, but this is something that I often see as an adjustment that between, you know, in a new marriage, right? That the men need to learn, listen, she just wants listening. She just wants me there, right? For her. The other changes are, let's say the wife might expect her chassan to know to pick up his clothing, to clean up after dinner. And he might not be trained to do that. he's not used to having to do much in a dorm, right? And some boys at home are not used to doing much. I think also one of the things that I always tell my couples is my number one piece of marriage advice is don't expect your spouse to read your mind. I say this all the time to my engaged couples, newlyweds, couples married for 50 years even. A lot of people expect their spouse to read their minds and then they're disappointed when their spouse doesn't know. Or a girl might even say to her husband, I don't want flowers, but she does want flowers, right? So those are some of the adjustments.
So that's expectations a man has to know that a woman wants to talk things out and be heard. And a man is very solution oriented and giving the solution is not going to take care of the issue. And also for each, you can't read each other's minds. I was just thinking about a Gemara. It's in Sota and other places as well. On a pasuk, Daga be lev ish. And there are two, when you have a concern in your heart, and there are two different approaches to dealing with that. One is just get it out of your heart, get rid of it. And the other is yisichenu la'acherim, that you should speak to others. And I just came to mind as you were speaking that it could be that the first approach is the man. Just get rid of it. Just get it out of your heart. Put it away. It'll go away. And don't worry about it. And the second one is that you should teach it to others to speak it out. It seems that more is the female approach to things and how you deal with dagos, concerns in the heart and sensitivities.
Right. The other piece that I think is important is many women want appreciation, verbal appreciation, right? And it's not always like that, but usually the woman wants it more. And that's something that I think a man has to learn about giving appreciation verbally.
Yeah, communication is the key. I read a study recently that that's the number one reason for divorces is because failures in communication. So that seems to be a very global issue.
Yeah. Every problem that couples come in with, whether it's parenting, whether it's financial, I always go at it the same way, the communication, changing the communication.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So what would you say are some of the initial disturbing surprises that a newlywed may have from his or her spouse? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, this is horrific. This is shocking to me. Had I known about this X, you know, what are some of the things that you see that a woman can be surprised about in a man or a man could be surprised about in a woman?
Okay, so I'll start with the lower level and then move on to the higher level. So on a lower level, a spouse might be surprised that their spouse being spoiled, their spending habits, you know, going out to eat all the time, especially if they're coming from different backgrounds, laziness, cleanliness, laziness, right? Maybe somebody marries someone who is a yeshiva bachur sitting and learning, and then they see, oh, you know what? He doesn't go to minyan, or he's not going back to yeshiva if I don't push him. That could be very upsetting for a newlywed Beis Yaakov girl or any frum woman, right? On the other side, a chassan might be disappointed by his kala, talking on the phone to her friends a lot, talking to her mother a lot. Maybe she has to call and ask a lot of questions and she wants to be on the phone with her family, or that's lower level. Now, something that unfortunately we're seeing a lot of today is a wife finding out about a porn addiction. And this is, I see this all the time now, unfortunately. It's a huge problem. I think it's, on the one hand, a lot of times when we see a porn addiction, it comes from a guy who had a traumatic background, like absent parents or dysfunctional home. And he found this, and then that became his way to cope with pain, right? That's one way. Then sometimes it's just like that it's just too accessible today. And these boys start and then they can't stop. And one thing that is very interesting is that some of these boys assume, you know what, once I get married, there goes my porn addiction. Why would I have a porn addiction when I have a wife? And it does not go away on its own. You can't just turn that off. So when a woman is newly married, now sometimes it comes out right away. Sometimes it doesn't come out for 3, 4, 10, 15 years. This is a huge betrayal for a wife to find out. Now, sometimes they'll say, wait a minute, I'm not surprised. Something was off. Sometimes it comes as a huge surprise. But either way, this is a betrayal that has to be treated almost as an affair. you need to do so much repair work on a marriage. Now, I do see couples that when they find out there's a porn addiction, there's a whole specialty in therapy now called a sex addiction therapist. There's many from therapists doing this to help these people. So if they find out they have this problem, there is help available. And I've seen people work on their marriage and have a beautiful relationship. But this is a terrible surprise that someone might find out about after they get married.
So let's say that the woman discovers something or the man discovers something once they've gotten married. So they've gotten married already. How do you deal with these issues? You said there are specialists for these areas. So how does the woman, when she finds out about something, does she go to the husband and say, we need to go to therapy? I found out about this. What's that conversation going to look like? And it doesn't have to be the porn addiction necessary. It could be that you find out that he's a bum or that he's on medication or whatever the case
may be. Or drinking too much.
Yeah. So how do you broach the conversation and how do you decide if you're going to stick with it and how you're going to deal with it?
Usually when the girl finds out, the cat's out of the bag and she tells him. That's what I've seen in most cases. And then the question is, are they aware enough to get the right help? Are they evolved enough to ask for help and say, you know what? This is okay. I'm going to ask for help. So some people listen, they're very savvy. They go on the internet, they do the research, they call relief, they find good help, but some people don't. And you really have to go to the right person to help you with these issues. Usually in this case, they would need individual therapy and couples therapy with any type of addiction.
So that means three therapists being involved.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Now that's when you find out after marriage. Is it advisable for couples in advance of marriage, and even if they don't sense anything is wrong, but just to go to coaching or therapy, communication therapy? How should couples handle when they want to make sure they want to start off on the right foot? Is there something available for workshops, coaching, teaching to make sure that they have a successful marriage and not making them think that there's anything wrong with either of them, but just let's go to this together and try to have some real coaching together, some teachings. So we're on the same page and we can have a smooth start to things.
Okay, yeah. So it's interesting because if you think about it, for someone to drive a car, they need to take a course and take a test. But to get married, you can become a certain age and you can just get married. That's a little scary, right? So the marriage is the foundation for beginning our family, our children's lives. And people just think they can wing it. So yes, there is education available. And outside of the firm world, in the secular world, it's actually in style to take premarital education. People do it. They think it's great. They feel good about it. I have secular couples that come to take premarital education also. In the Catholic Church, it's required. And yet, like I said before, all the rabbis are upset about the divorces, but no one has taken a stand. Actually, there are a few rabbis who do require. There's a few rabbis out there who say, listen, if you want to get married, you want me to be your Masader Kiddushin, you have to take a premarital course. In fact, Rabbi Arye Leibowitz, he won't marry a couple if they don't take premarital education. Unfortunately, there are some other rabbis that are realizing that, but many aren't. And if you think about it, premarital education, I'm not talking about therapy, I'm talking about learning how to have a healthy relationship, is as important as chasen and kala classes. And it actually goes together because you can't really be successful. You need the communication piece to go with the intimacy piece, right? So there are courses available, and I think it's a no-brainer, right? Why would we not want to start our marriages, and why would we not want to prepare our children for healthy marriages?
Right. I agree with that fully. Is there a hurdle to get over? Is there like a stigma to such a thing, like a stigma going to therapy? Or is this something that we should simply say this is well advised? Before driving a car, you take a course. Before you become a lifesaver, you take a course. Before you join Hatzalah, you take a course. And before you get married, you take a course.
Well, that's the problem. In the FRM community, there's a stigma. We're always behind, you know, the rest of the world in terms of coming around to these things. When I was growing up, nobody talked about therapy. Today, our generation, people talk about therapy much more openly. However, unfortunately, some people think premarital education, they are afraid of it. I've seen that I do have a bunch of rabbis, they'll only send me couples if there's a problem. And it's really not therapy, it's education. So we're really behind on this. And it's a shame because, like, why would we not? This is more important than your job or your employment. So why would you not want to be prepared?
Right. It makes a lot of sense. Well, Mrs. Pflug, you should have tremendous atzlacha. You give these workshops, right? Is it a couple that comes together to these courses, workshops, or do they have it separately, men and women separately? Yeah. So, and do you have multiple couples?
It could be catered based on like their religious observance, right? So if they're a couple that is very yeshivish or they haven't known each other long, I'll talk to them briefly before the wedding about healthy communication, but I'll really do the workshop after they're married. So it really depends.
Okay, very good. Well, how do people get in touch with you then?
They can go on PaninaPflugLCSW.com.
And it has information there.
Yeah. The other thing is that if anyone's interested in becoming a teacher to teach premarital couples, I'm happy to help guide them because we definitely need more. And I did a training course where we taught 30 from therapists, and it was therapists, rabbis, rabbis, and kala teachers. So rabbis and chassan and kala teachers can give a course. You don't have to be a therapist.
Oh, very interesting. Okay. So please get in touch with Mrs. Pflug. We should have another one of those sessions go forward. But thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.